Hey y'all, how's it going? Good, good. Can you believe it's already Monday again? Welcome to the show. Good morning to most of you. Good afternoon to the people on the East Coast and further east than there in the old world or, you know, at sea or whatever. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. It's libertarian foreign policy for the most part. Some cop hatred. Central banking. Booms and busts. But mostly the wars, yeah. Today on the show, James North is going to be on to talk about Israel-Palestine with us. He's from the Mondo Weiss blog. And I guess seems like lately he's co-author of everything with Phil Weiss over there, so that should be pretty good. I don't think I've talked with him before, James North. Anyway, looking forward to that. And yeah, it looks like that's going to be it. I tried to get Ray McGovern on, but that didn't work. And then I tried to get Eric Margolies on. That didn't work. Wish I knew who Bill Mann was. I'd like to interview Bill Mann. Guy's interesting. Used to be an interesting blogger. Now he's an interesting tweeterer. Anyway, maybe it's known who he is. It's just not by me. I might be the last one to know. All right. Well, anyway, it's my show, The Scott Horton Show. I got to write up a blog entry for today's show. Today's show. Oh, you know, I was trying to get Greg Grandin on. He's got a great one today on Henry Kissinger. That you guys will want to read at, it's running at antiwar.com and at tomdispatch.com. Yeah, well, you know, Kissinger. He's horrible. Grandin makes that point well. So, there you go. Probably have him on Thursday. He's got a whole new book on Kissinger, actually. So I think, yeah, he's going to be on later in the week to talk about that. All right. Got my my blog posting and my tweeting done. So Putin's giving his speech at the UN right now. It's the same speech that Obama gave previously, I think, mostly. About a bunch of, you know, democracy, hot air. Obama did make some important points, all of them wrong. Dare I say, evil. But anyway, dishonest, yeah. Yeah, I'll get to that in a second. First, I got to say thank you very much to everyone who is supporting the show with your regular donations or your one-off donations. Or with your bitcoins, man. I really need to get back in the habit of messing with this bitcoin wallet more. I opened up my bitcoin wallet the other day, and a few different people had sent me a few different fractions of bitcoins. Thank you. I love bitcoins. One of my greatest regrets in life is that I didn't make bitcoins my giant hobby back in 2009. At one point, I had 12 of them. I sold them all to pay 1 month's worth of rent. But I could have had a year's worth of rent if I had just waited till the bubble got big enough. Oh, well. Anyway. Bitcoins. I like those. If you go to scotthorton.org/donate, you can donate by way of bitcoins. And there's a lot of other ways to support, too. Also, Amazon.com. I never do mention this enough, and it's not prominent enough on the site at all. And actually, somebody emailed me and said, I can help you make the Amazon thing more prominent on the site. And then I said, oh, yeah, how so? And then I don't think I ever heard back from him. Anyway, actually, should be getting a new website put together here before too long as it is. So hopefully it'll be easier. But all you got to do is just go to scotthorton.org/Amazon. It will forward you right on. Or if you go to my website and look in the right-hand margin there, there's an Amazon ad. Right there in the right-hand margin. As long as you click that, it should be that anything you buy after that, I will get a kickback from their end of the sale. And, yeah, so that really helps. So those of you who've been making it a point to shop Amazon by way of my site, I sure do appreciate that a lot. It helps. And, check it out. So there's, a new deal offered by Derek Sheriff, who's just a big fan of the show and is trying to support. He runs Listen and Think Audio. He's the guy that hired me to do the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism versus Capitalism. And he's offering a deal where anyone who donates $50 to this show gets any audiobook they want from Listen and Think Audio. Anybody who donates $200, I'm skipping the $100 for a second. Anybody who donates $200, which is a lot, gets a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think Audio, all the libertarian audiobooks they've ever done or ever will do. Let's go to listenandthink.com to see all the ones they've done so far. And you'll get a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think libertarian audiobooks with any $200 donation to help support the Scott Horton Show. If you donate $100, then you get either a 1 ounce QR code commodity disc, a silver commodity disc. It tells you its instant spot price by when you scan it with your phone. Or you get a copy of Your Money or Your Life, Against the Income Tax by Sheldon Richman, Red, Blue, and Broke All Over by Charles Goyette, or what was the other one? I forgot. I don't know. Maybe I'll send you Phil Drew. If you want Phil Drew, I'll send you Phil Drew. Anyway, scotthorton.org/donate if you like helping support your favorite anti-government, anti-empire, foreign policy show here. Whatever it is, I'm against it. Oh, by the way, let's check this out, man. I forgot about this for a minute. TomWoods.com. Tom interviewed me on Friday. Oh, it hadn't posted yet. I guess it will post soon. Well, there's an extra little bit of editing because I recorded my end here and then I sent it to him. So we'll have good sound quality. They're going to, you know, marry up my audio recorded on my end with Tom's on his end, so it sounds like I'm in Iowa or Kansas or where the hell he lives. I think it just occurred to me that Iowa and Kansas are different places from each other. I mean, not that I didn't know that, but... Call me Barack Obama. I forgot how many states there are in the Union for a minute. Anyway, he lives in one of those plains states. But he interviewed me about Iraq War II. And, you know, Shea Machine Riley on Twitter reminded me that that was my first interview on the Tom Woods Show, was about Iraq and about Iraq War II, how they lied us into war in Iraq War II, whatever. And he said, you know, he heard that and he's been a listener of the show ever since then. Remember I told you, I thought I'd done an interview kind of like that before with Tom. I'm glad I didn't go back and listen to it or anything, so I kind of start fresh there, but. And I know I do have a problem with answering for 20 minutes at a time, but then he asked me very broad questions, and so it's kind of an invitation to say every single thing I can think of to say on any given topic. So we're talking about Iraq War II. The lies surrounding Iraq War II still haven't gone away. And... there are people who say, you know what, maybe it was a bad decision, but you still have to admit everybody thought he had weapons of mass destruction, this kind of thing. Lots of myths that just won't die. Mostly, I think, because people just don't like admitting that they were really, really, really wrong about something, especially if admitting that means having to concede that they were lied to and they believe the lies of lying liars, which kind of makes them a gullible fool, and people don't like feeling that way about themselves, so they rather pretend and insist on facts what ain't so. Anyway, I bet probably half of y'all heard me first on the Tom Woods Show. I hear that all the time from people, so hey, y'all, and hopefully you'll be in good company here in a minute, because Tom's gonna, I assume today, post that interview. All right, we'll be right back. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, Click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts.
I love Bitcoin, but there's just something incredibly satisfying about having real, fine silver in your pocket. That's why commodity discs are so neat. They're 1-ounce rounds of fine silver with a QR code on the back. Just grab your smartphone's QR reader, scan the coin, and you'll instantly get the silver spot price in Federal Reserve notes and Bitcoin. And if you donate $100 to the Scott Horton Show, he'll send you one. Learn more at facebook.com/commoditydiscs. Commoditydiscs.com.
All right, y'all, welcome back. Hey, join up the chat room, man, if you want. Hang out with the boys in there. Got a pretty full room today. Hey, guys, how's things? It's scotthorton.org/chat. Fake name and a CAPTCHA, and you're in there. scotthorton.org/chat. It's if you got one of them external-type applications, Pigeon or XChat or ChatZilla or some kind of thing, then it's an IRC-free node chat room, hashtag Scott Horton Show. That's also me on Twitter. Scott Horton Show. Find me on there. Send me tweets if you like tweeting about things. Oh, one more piece of business. On the 10th, I am giving a speech in Fort Worth, Texas. Jacob Hornberger is giving a speech. Angela Keaton is giving a speech. I'm giving a speech. Ted Galen Carpenter from Cato is giving a speech. So that's pretty good, right? To antiwar.com and FFF and a Cato. All together to oppose the empire. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to explain why I ain't like it and why I think you also shouldn't, too. That's going to be my speech. Things I don't like about the empire. No, it'll be against the terror war. You know me and what speech I'm going to give, man. It's going to be against the terror war. Okay. So, yeah, that's, I should give out details. The Texas Millennial Institute. They are young Ron Paulian libertarians. That's who they are, and that's what they're about, man. They are radicals for capitalism. And I'm paging down. I'm not finding it. Anyway, here's what I'll do. I will search. Let's see. Keaton. Horton. Nice typing. Hornberger, and then Carpenter. So that ought to be enough to pull us all up there since we're all the thing here. Yep, here we go. Make conversation, not war, a summit on foreign policy. Oops, bad link. This is somewhere else. It's like a clone of a thing. Here we go. TexasMillennialInstitute.org. You would think I would just memorize that. TexasMillennialInstitute.org. Sorry, that dead air was, I had to turn the microphone off and burp really loud, and I was sparing you the burp in your ear, so instead you got the dead air instead. TexasMillennialInstitute.org. Make conversation, not war. At Texas Christian University. Slow down. It'd be fine, just slow down. Texas Christian University, Saturday, October the 10th, 2015. Fort Worth, Texas. Make conversation, not war. Cool. I know what Hornberger's going to say. not sure what Angela's going to say. Hadn't talked with her about it yet. Should talk with her about it. Not sure what Carpenter has to say, but yeah, pretty sure I know what I'm going to do. And you know, I think I admitted this to you guys before. It's not very good salesmanship, but it's the truth. I really didn't do a very good job in my New Hampshire speech when I went to New Hampshire and gave a speech at the thing there because it was just way too much information and not enough context. So this time I'm going to do it the other way around. Context, 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 and then, you know, I can prove it if I got to kind of thing, but just try to explain who's on what side and why they're doing what they're doing and then why it doesn't make sense for us to allow our government to continue to do the things that it does. So, you know, in the New Hampshire thing, there were some people who were like, okay, yeah, I get it, whatever. But there were other people going, man, you lost me so long ago. I don't even know. Anyway, but this speech, it's going to be great. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try to take the lesson from Tom Woods. Tom Woods, when he gives a speech, he gets out there and goes, "Hey, everybody, how the hell are you?" Like it's a game show or something. I mean, not that he's cheesy like a game show, but he's just excited like a game show. He's happy as hell to be there like a game show and makes a connection with the audience there real quick and stuff. I don't have that much experience, man. I tend to get up there and just kind of, but anyway, it's going to be good. This time, it's going to be a great speech. Mostly they go off okay. Usually they start off kind of messed up, but then they get okay after that. All right, well, whatever. So, Obama's bluff called in Syria. Isn't it fun? I would like to see, it's so funny this morning to see everybody on MSNBC I was watching just crying their eyes out about Russia establishing hegemony in the Middle East. Wow, really? Hegemony, huh? Well, it was Andrea Mitchell, Alan Greenspan's wife. What a ridiculous person she is. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. That's what I'd like to see. If somebody's got to have hegemony there, why should it be the United States of America? Name one good reason why. Other than to keep the Russians out. But why? Who cares? The Russians only have one job. They're killing Mujahideen. I know. Everybody's hero nowadays is Ronald Reagan, and America's supposed to back the Mujahideen against the Russians. Except here's the thing about that, is they've become our enemy in the meantime, remember? They didn't like it when George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton and George W. Bush occupied the Saudi desert for 12 years in order to bomb and blockade Iraq. And they didn't like it when America supported Israel in their permanent occupation of Palestine and their semi-permanent on and off again occupation of southern Lebanon. At that time, it was pretty damn permanent. And then remember, they attacked us all through the 1990s and on September 11th. And then remember, America fought against Al-Qaeda in Iraq for the Shiite side, against the Sunni insurgents and their bin Ladenite terrorist buddies. Remember that? They killed, you know, about 4,000 of the 4,500 dead Americans from that war. But anyway, yeah, no, it's the 1980s, and nothing has happened since then. We're still only on Rocky 2 or 3 right now. We're still back in Saddam against Iran. We haven't even switched sides to Iran yet in the 1980s game. And so let's back the bin Ladenites against Assad. And the indignation, I should turn it back to MSNBC. They're worse than Fox on this. The indignation that, oh my God, the Russians want to go and bomb ISIS. But that's our job, is bombing ISIS. And also, we want to get rid of Assad, ISIS's greatest enemy, too. Because our policy makes so much sense. And the Russians are trying to undo all of our great progress there. And what are they talking about? I would almost kill a man to sell myself into lifelong slavery or something, to see anyone on one of these cable channels stop and point to, all of you are just ridiculous. Stop for a minute. America and our allies have been backing the bin Ladenites this whole time. On the side of the crucifiers, the beheaders, the suicide bombers, against the secular fascist dictatorship. What right do we have to do that? It's in the New York Times today. Brought in 30,000 foreign fighters. That's an invasion, not a civil war.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support The Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. So, yeah, it's funny, man, this morning watching MSNBC crying about, what? Russia's made a deal with Iraq to share intelligence to fight the Islamic State? Andrew Mitchell, our so-called ally, Iraq. Oh, are you upset that America fought an 8-year war for their enemies? Whose fault was that? Oh, I know. It was Andrew Mitchell's job as a news reporter on MSNBC to tell the truth to the people about what power was up to. Like, hey, everyone, you know that Iraq did not do 9/11, right? Remember all the times that Andrew Mitchell said that in the late winter of 2002, early spring 2003? Me neither. I seem to remember her being on TV news then and accepting at face value that only good could come of the invasion of Iraq, which Saddam Hussein was forcing upon the United States of America. Do you remember that too? Oh, our so-called ally, Iraq, and how is it exactly that they're betraying us? They're betraying us by aligning with Russia against the Islamic State. Does anybody get the idea that America's foreign policy is in the hands of a foreign power or two or three, and rather than in the hands of Americans at all at this point? Russia's over there in America's place fighting the Sunni-based insurgency, and we're supposed to be sad about that. That's American son's job, to go over there and die fighting for Iran in Iraq. Everybody knows that. How dare Vladimir Putin usurp America's role over there? And of course, yes, America again is on both sides of this fight. But this is the kind of thing that our empire gets mad about. This is what led to that little bit of a dispute, I think. And part it was probably mostly just a matter of language and misunderstanding, but it kind of became a little bit of an argument between myself and Alfred McCoy on the show when he talked about the integration of Russia, China, and Europe with all these new superhighways and pipelines and railroad lines and how, you know, it's the end of American hegemony. And my idea, my question is, so what do we have to lose? Control of Eurasia? That's complete insanity to think. The middle part of North America is supposed to rule Eurasia. Well, guess who rules Eurasia? The Eurasians. The Russians, the Chinese, the Kazakhs, the Tajiks, the Uzbeks, the Afghans. Because that's where they're from. That's where their countries are. Okay? America is way the hell over here. I know they don't teach geography in school, but you do have some idea of the new world, right? Way the hell over here across the Atlantic Ocean from there. Or the Pacific, whichever way you're traveling. What kind of, what is it that American civilians think they have to lose if other nations have primacy in Eurasia rather than the United States? You think the Russians could even afford to dream of invading and occupying Iraq, knocking off the king of Saudi Arabia and putting in a new replacement regime there? You think that'd all be profitable for Russia to try to take over the Middle East? They couldn't anyway. And then if they did, what do you think they're going to do? Stop selling oil for money? This whole thing is completely ridiculous. You know, back a few generations ago, they had to admit, I know, we don't really care whether it's the British or the French or the Russians or the Japanese or whoever rules the world empire. Not really. But in this case, Soviet communism is an ideology of complete and total human slavery and death, which of course is true. And so In this case, it's a special exception that America has to build an empire to contain this empire because it's a communist one. But so this isn't a communist one. This is just the Russians. And all they're doing is propping up Assad, the secular dictator, in the, it is disputed now, I admit, two-piece versus three-piece suit. I'm pretty sure I saw him wearing a vest at one point. The guy who wakes up, Bashar al-Assad, who wakes up and shaves his chin in the mirror every morning. Because apparently he doesn't give a damn about Allah, much less being a bin Ladenite, Islamist extremist, would-be, you know, suicide bomber or leader of them. And I'm tired of having to stick up for this guy. I'm not. I'm just, you know, sticking up for the truth. When they're trying to demonize Assad as though the people of Syria should all have to just bow down and accept an American and Saudi and Turkish and Qatari and Israeli-backed invasion of their country by 30,000-plus foreign fighters from Iraq, from Saudi, from Libya, from around the Middle East, who've come to invade and create a bin Ladenite dictatorship there, whether under al-Nusra or ISIS. Oh, no. All the Assyrian and Chaldean and Maronite Christians, all the Shia and the Alawites and the Druze, they should all just lay down and die, goddammit, because that's what Israel wants, because that's what Saudi wants. They should stick their neck out to be beheaded by the Zarqawiites, because why? Because of any convincing reason they can sell you as an American? That the secular coalition, which includes very many Sunnis as well, that backs Assad, that they have no right to, that it's foreign powers led by the United States with an army of bin Ladenite suicide bomber shock troops that have the right to decide who's the rightful regime between Syria and Iraq. This whole thing is madness and the righteous indignation. Oh my God, can you believe that Iran and Russia are working together to save all of the Syrian Christians, Druze, Shia, Alawites, and so many Sunnis from having their effing heads chopped off? How dare he? This is like that time he started a war in eastern Ukraine. Everybody remember that? No, of course not, because that's not how it happened. How it happened was America started a war in eastern Ukraine. But hey, whatever, man. We got our narrative, we got our slogans, and sticking to them. It's MSNBC, where Alan Greenspan's wife, the guy that blew and popped two massive bubbles that destroyed the world economy and so many lives here and abroad, his wife is going to tell you how it really went down. Oh, no, she's not. She's just going to stick with the slogan and no details or explanation whatsoever. Yeah, when Russia invaded Crimea, they don't mention that not one single person died in the Russian invasion of Crimea. And who were the soldiers who invaded it? Oh, they were the Marines and sailors who were already there based at Sevastopol, where they have been all along. And why was Crimea part of Ukraine? Because the Ukrainian drunken Soviet communist dictator Khrushchev said so one night. That's why. Otherwise, it had belonged to Russia since the days of the American Articles of Confederation. Before the Constitution was ever even, written or ratified. And German pollsters and other Western European pollsters have since been to Crimea and verified that they have above 90% approval for rejoining Russia. And I am an individualist and not a statist, and it is a shame, I admit, that the 7% who would have wanted to stay, you know, out of 93, the 7 who would have rather stayed in Ukraine didn't have their way, but as far as majority rules go on secession and sovereignty, seems like 93 is a pretty solid count there, according to the Germans. Just like the election results that they said were bogus, by the way. Hey, Al Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place. and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code SCOTT when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism vs. Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism vs. Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. All right. So, yeah, Donald Trump is making this a campaign thing. Disclaimer, just so nobody is confused, I hate this guy's freaking guts. He's completely ridiculous and horribly statist on everything. Everything. He's just horrible. So we're clear. But he says, hey, the rest of these Republican rivals of mine, they want to start World War III over Syria. Russia wants to go to Syria to kill ISIS? Fine, let them. Now, maybe he didn't get his Likud party talking points that, hey, Donald, that's not what Israel wants. Fall in line, as is, you know, the rule inside Washington, D.C. Boy, is he toe it when it comes to the Iran deal. Man, I would love to see someone ask him a question about the Iran deal based on, you know, hey, now that the 24-day things is already moot since the Iranians have already invited the IAEA to Parchin, and since the self-inspection thing is already moot because the IAEA was monitoring the whole thing as they took their swipes, the control and the IAEA samples, And now that every part of the American national security establishment has explained that the part about we will help them secure their nuclear facilities in no way implies in 1 million years a new military alliance with Iran in the event that they're attacked by the Israelis, for Christ's sake, that is so freaking stupid. You'd have to be living on another planet to believe that that would be part of the nuclear deal. That's funny how Donald Trump's one of the only ones who knows that, him and Frank Gaffney and maybe Ted Cruz, you know, of all the other opposition to the Iran deal, so many of them forgot to notice the part where there's apparently we're bringing them into NATO and swearing to go to war with Israel for them. What? And so since all those three excuses that you've been invoking so far are bogus and bunk, since all we're talking about is a civilian nuclear program that's being safeguarded more than ever before, what's so bad about it? Oh, it's a terrible deal, a terrible deal. Which part? The part where they scale back their program by 90-something percent and we stop our economic war against them? Oh, yeah. It's terrible. It's just like that time, as Charles Lister was saying today, that Assad created the Islamic State just to kill him. He said, how can I get 100,000 of my soldiers killed? I know what I'll do. I'll call Barack Obama and I'll call the king of Saudi Arabia. I'll call Prince Bandar over there. I'll call Erdogan and I'll have them raise up a bin Ladenite army to invade my country and kill 100,000 of my soldiers. And then that way I'll have an excuse to drop barrel bombs on civilians. Uh-huh. That's Bashar al-Assad's foreign policy. I read it on Twitter all morning long from every liberal Democrat and every conservative Republican foreign policy pundit. Everybody knows that. It's just like that time that, like that time Israel created Hamas so they would have an enemy in the Gaza Strip. You know, like that. Yeah, no. Anyway. I just think it's funny. No, it's not funny. I think it's important. that Trump is picking this fight. Because the rest of the Republicans, they are so in line with the Israelis. Going to this John Hay Institute, it's called. It's their new PNAC for this time around. Getting schooled by Elliot Abrams and a bunch of lunatics about how foreign policy should be. And I don't think they're allowed to not fight about this. I sure hope that Trump sticks with this. I don't think Putin's so bad. If he wants to kill Al-Qaeda, fine. Let's hear them argue with that. Let's hear them argue with that. No, save Al-Qaeda. They're the moderates. They're helping overthrow the secular dictator in the three-piece suit with the secular coalition of all the Christians, Druze and Shia and Alawites in the country, and a whole hell of a lot of the Sunnis, too. No, only when Al-Qaeda rules Damascus, only then will it be time to go to war against Al-Qaeda. Only then will we be thankful for the Russians fighting the war for us against them. But right now, damn it, Benjamin Netanyahu wants Assad gone. Those are your marching orders, America. Al-Qaeda, moderate. Al-Qaeda, moderate. Just say that over and over and over again, okay? Then it becomes true. I guess. I mean, you have to not try to think about it or anything. Just repeat it over and over again. Back to the trip of watching cable TV news, where they just say all this stuff with a straight face without acknowledging the contradiction in the policy here whatsoever, with no one ever saying, hey, you know what? Maybe it really doesn't make sense to overthrow Assad if he's in the middle of a war with a bunch of bin Ladenites. People who are still sworn to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher of New York City. Nope. We're just going to go on. Let's see. Russia versus Osama bin Laden. I guess we're on Osama's side. USA, USA, USA. MSNBC and Fox News consensus. All right. Meanwhile, U.S. calls for patience, but Iraq's inability to retake Ramadi raises doubts about plans. So, you know, this is like I told you if weeks and weeks and weeks ago. If they can't take the Baiji refinery and hold it, which the whole thing is worthless now anyway. Why are they even fighting over it anyway? It's way too damaged. They need absolute peace and security to invite the Japanese out to give the thing an entire overhaul, to completely replace pretty much everything to get it up and running again. It's already over. But they can't even hold the little town of Baiji nearby. I don't know how they're holding on to Crete, unless they're just not letting the Sunnis come home at all. But here they can't hold on to Baiji, and they say, yeah, we're in full frontal assault on Fallujah and Ramadi. Well, really? You and what army? The Badr Brigade? The Shiite militias are going to outright march on Fallujah, a town of a couple of million at least. Doubtful. And it hadn't gone anywhere. I mean, a bunch of people are getting killed, but power's not changing hands here. They'll eventually pull back. You know, there's an episode of Yes Minister in the way the Iraqi government operates, too. You can see the, it's like reading Joseph Heller, Catch-22, all the incentives for the way that the officers act have nothing to do with reality and everything to do with internal army politics. Come on, let's attack Fallujah! When they're nothing like ready to attack Fallujah. But it's only because, you know, this guy promised his superior officer that they were, and so off they go anyway. This is kind of crap. You ever see that great movie about World War I with Kirk Douglas? And, I guess he's a Brit in the movie, or maybe he's an American, or maybe he plays a Frenchman in the movie. I forget how it goes. I think maybe he's a Frenchman in the movie. And he's an officer, and his officers keep ordering him to order all his people to just be slaughtered by the machine guns. And he tries to stand up to them and whatever. Maybe one of you old movie buffs knows the name of the movie I'm talking about. It's a real good one. I was a fan of the show, turned me on to that thing back 10 years ago, probably. Anyway, or just read Catch-22. It's also hilarious. It's such a great explanation of how government works, you know? Anyway, Yeah, 30,000 fighters, admits the New York Times, fighting in Syria. Keep calling it a civil war, though. And keep pretending that we weren't told by Eric Margolis back this time, 2011, that there's a massive NATO covert operation to funnel Mujahideen, special forces, and spies into Syria to create a civil war. Like we didn't know all about it all along. Well, anyway. Coming up, I got James North, and then I got a lot of police state news, too. So that should be nice. I think.
So I think, Wyatt, you know, despite the great pleas that we hear from those people who are being ruthlessly assaulted by Assad, if you're a military planner or if you're a secretary of state and you're trying to figure out, do you have the elements of an opposition that is actually viable, we don't see that.
Paths of Glory is the movie. Thanks, Zoe. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at Darren'sCoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren'sCoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. Darren'sCoffee.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Oh, need my ear goggles on here. Hang on. All right. All right. So our first guest, our only guest on the show today is James North from MondoWeiss.net, the war of ideas in the Middle East, of course that is. Welcome to the show. James, how are you?
Delighted. Thanks for inviting me.
Very happy to have you here. I read you every morning. I get the morning email, and I can't resist clicking on always a majority of the stories in there, and quite a few of them are by you, especially lately, it seems like. So always learn a lot, and it's kind of sad to say it's a pretty unique niche you have there, you know, providing honest coverage of Israel-Palestine for an American audience. So it's sad but true, but anyway, happy to have you around. I wanted to first ask you about something that I'm not certain you've written about, but I'd be willing to bet you have been paying some attention, and that is how the Israeli establishment, and particularly the Netanyahu government, are handling their loss on the nuclear deal, and what they have to say about Iran and the nuclear deal going forward from here since they lost in the U.S. Congress. We've heard very little about what the Israelis are, the Israeli government, that is saying since their defeat on that?
Well, great. That's an excellent question. I don't follow that directly myself, but certainly Mondo Weiss covers a lot of that. We have two reporters in Palestine, Israel, who write up this kind of thing. I think it's important to keep in mind that the Israeli government claimed that its threat was that the Iranians would get nuclear weapons and threaten the future or the existence of Israel. I don't think anyone who looks realistically at this believes that this was the actual fear. The fear is that a strengthened Iran would be a counterbalance to Israel in the Middle East region and would be able to Israel would not be able to continue the occupation and settlement of Palestinian territories. I did do a piece up at Mondo Weiss about a week or so ago in which the question was, who has the bigger military budget, Israel or Iran? And to my surprise, on consulting some of the experts who are quoted in the piece, it turns out that Iran's military budget is smaller than that of Israel, far smaller than that of our U.S. ally, Saudi Arabia. And in fact, This fight over the Iran deal has been basically a hidden fight over continuing the occupation in Palestine and Israel's regional strength. That's what the real issue has been here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it sure seems like, in fact, Gareth Porter writes in his book, Manufactured Crisis, that it was actually Rabin who brought up, who basically spoiled the relationship between Israel and Iran and turned on them for PR purposes to distract from the fact that he was trying to negotiate a two-state solution. But then after his assassination, every successor prime minister since then has continued the demonization, but for the opposite reason, to distract from the fact that they'll never negotiate a two-state solution and that it's still basically Grand Theft
West Bank. I believe you're 100% right. And what you had was up to $20 million spent on ads and propaganda in the U.S. media, frankly frightening people in the United States, the idea that a nuclear Iran was a threat not only to Israel, but to possibly even the United States, when frankly that wasn't the issue at all. And I'm sure top Israelis recognize this and say this. They're very adept at manipulating American public opinion, and this time they failed, though. Mm-hmm.
All right, now, so let's talk about what's going on in the West Bank here. Can you tell us the story of the killing of this Palestinian woman, Hadil? Well, 18-year-old. That she'd be a child if she was a white American. So this teenager, Hadil, I'll let you say your last name. I won't.
Sure. Say. Hadil Al-Hashlamun. Basically, what happened here is yet another instance of New York Times bias in reporting. Now, I personally this year have done probably 20 different articles in Mondo Weiss pointing this out. It's not work that I particularly enjoy doing, in the sense that I feel I should be able to pick up my Main Street. I live here in New York City, so the New York Times is, you know, my home newspaper. I feel I should be able to pick it up and read articles about other parts of the world that follow the general rules that when I taught journalism were taught in Journalism 101, which is to listen to all sides of the story, give everyone their say, etc. And in many areas, the New York Times does exactly this. But in terms of covering Palestine and Israel, we find that it falls short often. And the latest example is on September 22nd, a young Palestinian woman, Hadil Al-Hashlamun, was shot dead at a checkpoint in Hebron in the occupied West Bank of Palestine. And there are photographs, which we have on Mondo Weiss and which are available on the Internet, of a frightening photograph of an Israeli soldier in uniform with an automatic weapon pointing his weapon at her just before he shot her dead. Okay. Now, the New York Times briefly covered the story. This happened on September 22nd. The New York Times briefly covered the story, and they printed, first they printed the Israeli government response, which was that this was an accident or they had an excuse or whatever, which is okay. I mean, print both sides, fine. But then they went on and briefly they quoted an eyewitness, a European activist, who said that the Israeli, he challenged the Israeli account and said the woman hadn't been provocative in any way. Okay, so far so good. However, this story is flying all around the internet. Other places have covered it, but the New York Times in the ensuing 5 days has not done a single story. And what I do in today's in Mondo Weiss, the piece that's up now, is I say, let's do a thought experiment. Let's say that a young Jewish woman dressed in Orthodox clothing was shot dead by uniformed Palestinian policemen somewhere in the West Bank. Would the New York Times ignore this story day after day? And of course they wouldn't. They would be covering it in great detail. So my final verdict here is that after 5 days, the Times has not followed up this story in any way. Amnesty International issued a report that said that this was an extrajudicial killing, which I think is a polite way to say it's a murder. But the Times did not report what Amnesty International said. There was no effort to write about the reaction among this young woman's family to give us a little background as to who she was and how she happened to be at that checkpoint. The Times has at least three reporters in Israel-Palestine, but none of them has tried to go out and independently investigate the Israeli version of the killing. And there has not been a single photograph. These photographs are some of the most striking photographs. I invite anyone to go to mondoweiss.net and see what I'm talking about. These photographs are very striking and painful. The Times has not published them. So, again, we're not suggesting at Mondo Weiss that the Times turn itself into a pro-Palestinian propaganda organ. By no means. We're simply suggesting that it do its job as a mainstream press media outlet and cover all the news that's fit to print and put all sides of the story. It's a simple request.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, they act like Israel is the 51st state when it's a foreign country. And never mind how ridiculous this is when it's a domestic thing, right? When it's, and you know, the New York Times has been guilty of this, but just in the last year, they've decided to try to rectify this a little bit and start covering police killings of Americans who don't deserve it. And yet here, they're giving the kind of deference to the IDF that they won't give to the cops of Baltimore.
Absolutely. You're entirely right. And, but at the same time, Another element of the Times bias in this is they cover up the kind of, you asked me earlier about the Israeli government and its reaction. Well, they have some extreme, this is the most right-wing government in Israel's history, and they have some extremely conservative in the bad sense of the word, okay? Not in the libertarian sense by any means. But they have some arch right-wing people there who are in power, and the Times makes no efforts to write about these people at all. For instance, the current Minister of Justice is a woman called Ayelet Shaked, and she approvingly put a Facebook post up about a year ago that basically implied that all Palestinians are guilty, even the children, and that they should be, the children are little snakes who would grow into big snakes that would threaten Israel, and these people should be killed. So here's a person
this
who's
is their
now
attorney
Minister
General.
Of Justice.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. All right, I'm sorry, James. I got to interrupt you right here. We got to take this break, but we'll be right back, everybody, with James North from MondoWeiss.net. Hey, y'all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at MasterSamuraiTech.com. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, you guys, welcome back. Scott Horton Show. I'm talking with James North. He's at MondoWeiss.net. And, well, we're talking Israel-Palestine and lots of things. The killing by the IDF of this 18-year-old young woman on September the 22nd, the coverage of it, etc. Plenty to follow up there. But where we left off at the break, you were mentioning and... It's an unfortunate thing to be interrupted on, James, so I'm happy to let you restate the point. It's a hugely important one. You were talking about something that had been said or written on Facebook by the woman who is now the Justice Minister of Israel, which parliamentary system, but basically that's their attorney general, their top law enforcement officer on the national level there in Israel, correct?
That's right. And in fact, this woman, Ayelet Shaked, she's actually a protege of one of Netanyahu's coalition partners, and she's got a very senior job now. And the fact is that a year ago, she's known as an extreme racist, frankly, anti-Palestinian racist. This is well known in Israel. And she basically, on her Facebook page, approvingly quoted another person of that ilk, who basically implicitly called for the genocide of Palestinians, get rid of the Palestinian problem by getting rid of the Palestinians. Well, the New York Times did a profile of this woman in which it downplayed that and basically instead informed us that she was good at mathematics and that she was had been a Girl Scout. I mean, you know, you can humanize almost anybody. So the point isn't that we're arguing that on the Weiss.net, we're not arguing that the New York Times should become a weapon in the pro-Palestinian struggle. We understand how the mainstream media works. But I'm reminded of a famous quote from Emma Goldman, the great anarchist feminist over 100 years ago. And she said at one stage, "We want them to live up to their values before we even try to teach them what our values are." And here's an instance where this leading newspaper, which is extremely influential, you know, not just in the United States, but worldwide, where it's falling down on the job. And we, you know, every few days we find another instance of this, and we chronicle this on MondoWeiss.net. And I can tell you, we get a tremendous reaction from the public. The website is growing. People are following us more and more, as you kindly mentioned at the beginning of our segment here. You tend to read it every morning. And the problem is, it's necessary because there are very few other websites, at least in the United States, where you can get this kind of straightforward coverage of what's actually going on in Israel-Palestine.
Yeah. Well, and of course, there is a real controversy there because, to plagiarize Colbert, the truth about Israel-Palestine has a well-known pro-Palestinian bias. And so they have to treat the issue this way, because if they're just frank about, you know, look, to even tell the story, you have to say, well, remember now, Israel's been occupying the West Bank since 1967.
Right.
You know, a military foreign occupation longer than the Soviets ruled Eastern Europe going on here. These people have no rights whatsoever. And the Israelis are in violation of international law 500 ways. Okay, now the rest of the details of the current story that we're breaking here. But that's the kind of context that they would have to provide every time if they're going to tell the truth. And they sure as hell aren't going to do that.
Right. Well, exactly. I mean, the West Bank and Palestine would be well, any decent person, but certainly a libertarian's nightmare. I mean, the checks, the papers, the stopping you. If you want to talk about government power, you know, about government dictatorship, try living under a military occupation. I mean, there's no more extreme version of it. I mean, it's quite extraordinary. And that's why I'm very thankful. I'm not a libertarian myself, though I'm very sympathetic to some of your views. But I'm very thankful that the libertarian community has spoken up on this issue repeatedly over the years. Many of your people have, you know, going back to Ron Paul, have pointed out that that this occupation and that the U.S. policy getting involved in endless wars overseas is dangerous both for the places that we invade and for our own country.
Well, it's simple natural rights theory carried to its conclusion. Palestinians are humans. They own property. You don't have the right to kill them and take it. Nobody does. Simple as that. Same as everyone. So
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You know, and liberals and conservatives always, you know, agree with that, at least to a degree. Us libertarians, we just mean it 100% of the time.
Right.
But everybody, at least in the West, you know, pretends like those are the principles we start with, at least in America.
But this is why the censorship, right?
This is why they can't ever explain to the Americans. They pretend like Palestine is the country next door, forever threatening the poor Israelis with terrorist attacks, and never explain that they already lost. They lost a long time ago. They've been conquered since then. And that's the current context, you know?
Precisely. And that's why, the New York Times coverage, again, is so, because New York Times coverage also sets the tone for coverage in other parts of the mainstream American press. You know, if the New York Times had followed up this story about this young woman being judicially murdered, and again, I invite your listeners to go to MondoWeiss.net and look at the photographs. I mean, it couldn't be more clear what's happening there than and yet these photographs have never appeared in the Times. But if the Times had started to pursue this story, then other newspapers and media outlets, possibly even the major networks, would have done something about it, and people would be talking about it. And again, as you just pointed out, why is this woman going through a checkpoint in her own country, Palestine? Well, there's a military occupation. What does that really mean? What does that in practical terms mean for people there? It sometimes means that people die in ambulances on their way to a hospital because the military checkpoint, there's a backup. It means that children are sometimes born in the back of the family car because they can't get to the hospital in time. It goes on and on. But the fact is, you're right. If people knew, I'm absolutely convinced that if people in the United States knew that what was really going on in Israel-Palestine, they would not give the extent of support that they do to the Israeli government, which they mistakenly believe is defending freedom, is part of the free world, etc. That's not true.
Right. Yeah, I have to believe that. And I guess it's the great, you know, there is no counterfactual. There is no real way to prove it. You know, it's unfalsifiable because it's never going to change. They're never going to, you know, be honest with the American people about what's going on around here. And so it's just going to continue. And as you say,
on the plus side, I tend to agree with you. But at the same time, on the plus side, you know, with alternative media, both online and programs like yours, the word is starting to get out there. I mean, I've been following the Israel-Palestine question for quite a few years now, and there's a decisive change in opinion, particularly among younger people. Younger people on campuses and elsewhere are becoming more and more aware of what's going on here. And the beauty of the Internet is it's still free, to a great extent, and you can go on there and you can find things out that you won't read in your local newspaper. I mean, to try and get the message out about this woman's story would not be publicized. You know, you'd have to wait a month until a tiny little magazine came from Palestine to learn about this. And now it's right in front of everybody's face. You know, one you turn your computer on and you can learn about it.
Yeah. And by the way, please, everybody, do that as soon as you can. Go to Mondo Weiss, look at this, and watch the video. He mentioned the still pictures, but watch the video. It took this woman, by some reports, I think half an hour to lay there and bleed out while these guys
awful.
Just stood around gawking at her. And I even read that one of them was an EMT. And they just sat there and watched
awful.
Her die for half an hour laying on the ground. You got to see it, everybody. I just tweeted the video out, too. All right, that's James North at MondoWeiss.net. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for MPV Engineering. This isn't for all of you, but for high-end contractors specializing in industrial construction and end users who own and operate industrial equipment. MPV offers licensed professional consulting on chemical and mechanical engineering for your projects. Tanks, pressure vessels, piping, heat exchangers, HVAC equipment, chemical reactors for oil companies or manufacturing facilities, as well as project management support and troubleshooting for those implementing designs. MPV will get your industrial project up and running. Head over to mpvengineering.com.
All right, y'all. Welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Man, I'm sorry we ran out of time. I really wanted to get to about the stone-throwing thing here where little Palestinian kids with rocks are the new Iran over there in Israel right now. Netanyahu, he's taking a brave stand, and he's announced that he's going to have military snipers kill kids with rocks. You know, throwing them at those who are militarily occupying their land. Oh, when will the horrible Palestinian occupation of Israel ever end? See, all you got to do is truncate all the antecedents and, you know, truth and context and reality. Why, that's Judea and Samaria. It belonged to the Israelis when there weren't even any Israelis, when they were all still living in Europe. And so now those Palestinians, why, they are just being so unfair, refusing to give up all of their land to the Russians and Germans and Americans who were born with the natural birthright to it. What's so hard to understand about that nonsense? Anyway. Hey, this is pretty cool, man. The FARC commie guerrillas in Colombia are laying down their arms and making peace. Unfortunately, the government of Colombia is apparently not agreeing to the same conditions. They will continue to be armed. But That's good, because communism is stupid. And even if you're up against horrible right-wing fascists, communism still isn't going to actually provide for any prosperity. You need freedom for that, so. And I'm sure that their government is, I think, has always been a very right-wing American CIA-backed government, if not outright dictatorship. But anyway, so I don't know everything in the world about that issue other than probably didn't have to be that way. Certainly, American insistence, rulership of the hemisphere has dictated that any group like this get into the drug trade in order to make their money. I'm sure these guys didn't start out as cocaine dealers. It took Bushes and Clintons and Obamas and Bushes and Bushes to make it that way. Well, there's lots of those guys. But anyway, so yeah, I ain't saying the side of the government was right just because the commies weren't. It says here more than 220,000 people have been killed, 6 million displaced. At least at one point, the FARC controlled a piece of Colombia the size of Switzerland or something. Although Switzerland is a very crumpled up kind of a country. You know, if you spread it out, it's a lot bigger. Anyway, I was told that by a Swiss one time. It's a crumpled up country, you understand. Anyway, so I like the sound of that. It's not the biggest deal in the world to me, but maybe it should be. Maybe. Oh, you know what? I bet you who knows a bunch about that would be Greg Grandin, who I'm going to interview on Thursday about Henry Kissinger. Because he wrote a whole book called, what was it called again? I can't remember. I read a little bit of it, but eh. It was about, it was about the American Empire ruling South America. Empire's, I want to say like playground or experimental laboratory or empire's something. Guinea pigs. All right, so that's good. Hey, also good news, in Catalonia, they voted for independence from Spain. So that's pretty good for all Orwell fans. Good for them. Justin Raimondo has an article about it at antiwar.com if you want to read about it. And he says in there, the Spanish aren't going to do anything about it. They're going to have to respect it because what are they going to do? Start a war? Conquer Catalonia? They lost. They're done. Give it up. Sets a huge precedent for the future of Europe. Won't be long before the Flemish split off from the rest of the Belgians. And God knows what. And maybe the French, too. Some of the Flemish live in France, right? Anyway, I don't know. There's a million little would-be and pseudo-nationalities as the EU breaks apart. Expect European states to break apart into smaller and smaller pieces. Well, see, it's prosperity that helps paper over all these differences so that we can all just get along. But what happens is we let our governments have central banks, and they create booms and busts, and they prevent prosperity. They cause deformations and dislocations that ruin lives and the grandest of their own plans. I mean, I'm not for supranational states, but I am for individualism. An end to borders in a good way, not a bad way. Not making a bigger border around the circumference of the planet, but just, you know, shrinking them down to just property lines. If you understand what I mean. And why should the Flemish have to split off from the Belgians other than they feel like they're getting ripped off because they are? Right? Why do the Catalonians want to split off from the rest of Spain? Because they're getting ripped off and they don't want to. But why does anybody have a right to rip off anybody? It's because you call them the government of Spain? They got the right to steal from people? There's your problem right there. You got a jackass for a statesman. All right.
Anyway. Oh, and speaking of jackassery and catastrophe, as Obama's up there singing the praises of American exported democracy, Kunduz falls to the Taliban. Oh, you better run like hell, child rapists. The Taliban are back with the rule of law. Yes, America has backed your lavish, decadent corruption all these years. But the sheriff is back in town, and they're going to throw the rapist down a well. We've seen this movie, what happens when the Taliban come into town. They go, who's the guy you want us to kill? This guy is the one causing you all trouble? And then they kill him. And then they go, now, don't you prefer us as your security force to him? And the people go, yeah, I have to admit we do. You're scary sons of bitches, you Taliban, but at least you threw the child molester down the well. Although there's a problem because we got to drink that water, so maybe you could drag his corpse back up here and throw it in a ditch so that we could have water and less child rape. Is that cool? Sorry about that. Anyway, so good for the people of Afghanistan. Their worst security force has been run out of town by a slightly less bad one. That's right. You didn't think that America, in invading and occupying Afghanistan, was putting people better than who they overthrew in charge, did you? No, no, no. USA, we're the champions. We, yeah, our state, champion of Hekmatyar, who likes to skin his victims alive, sometimes anyway, who used to work for the CIA, then outright betrayed him and backstabbed him and helped bin Laden escape and then laughed in America's face about it and then is now, what, the vice president or something? General Dostum, who is the guy who did the Taliban massacre, I think, in Kunduz, right? In 2001, where they rounded up all the Taliban who had surrendered to them nearby. They put them all in basically trailers, right? Like truck trailers. And then they machine gunned them all to death through the trailers and then let the rest suffocate and drown in the blood of the rest. As Amy Goodman documented and Newsweek and others at the time. Yeah. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime future freedom author Scott McPherson, Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. Lucky for you, it's almost over. I mean, really, you could quit any time. You don't have to listen, but I appreciate you listening, despite your best interests and time. Let's talk about how much cops are horrible and evil and how much I hate them. Here's how much I hate them. A lot. Tons. All right. Here's one from Liberty Upward. Cops pull gun on couple driving to the hospital to give birth. The dash cam footage has surfaced. January 2012. I guess we're just supposed to be happy and thankful that they didn't execute all three of them, right? James Rainier was driving his wife Dana to the hospital after her water broke. On the way, they passed a police car, which turned its lights on and pulled them over, despite the fact that they weren't speeding. Rainier tried to explain to the officer, Sergeant Anthony Dandurand, that his wife was in labor and that they were on their way to the hospital. But Dan Durand responded by yelling repeatedly at Rayner to, quote, get on the effing, sorry, it's a radio show, you know, ground, and cuffed him, while another officer, Travis Thomas, stood over him with his gun pointed at his head. Because, you know, they're your security force, and this is your reward for loving them more than you love your own family. Oh, I love our heroes, the police. Oh, I felt so protected when the cop was holding a gun to my head. It was like being a small child, safe in a blanket. Please, put your gun to my head some more. Pull the trigger if you like. That's how I'll know I'm really safe. When the government has finally subjected me to, what do they call it in Israel? An extrajudicial killing. What seems to be the problem, officer? Well, you're speeding. Oh, yeah, I know. Well, the thing is, my wife, she's in labor. Here, let me put a gun to your head and threaten to kill you if you don't lay down on the ground right now, and I don't give a damn what happens to your baby or your wife. How do you like that? And you know why cops act this way, right? Do you know why? It's not because they're racist. Although, yeah, they're racist. And it's not because they hate everyone. Although, yeah, of course, they're horrible, hateful little people. Pathetic men, mostly. But that's not what it is. You know what it is? They know that there's no accountability. That's the answer. No matter what they do to you, they will never get in trouble. Because guess who's in charge of the getting in trouble? Right, them. Themselves. It's the same reason that you probably don't spend most of your day punishing yourself. Huh. Or your friends. Your colleagues. That's the simple answer. There's no accountability. There's no such thing as the rule of law. There never was such a thing as the rule of law. That would mean that the enforcers of the law, the writers of the law, the interpreters of the law would be subject to it also. And they're not. And we all know they're not. The judges, the prosecutors, the cops, they can all conspire to frame up whoever they want, and they're never held to any account whatsoever. Cops can kill whoever they want. They can brutalize whoever they want. The worst thing that'll happen to them is they'll have to stomach and laugh while the taxpayers of their town pay a civil lawsuit against the department or the city. There's no accountability, and that's why the cops can murder your little sister and laugh. That's why the cops can brutalize your son and his wife on the way to their hospital with their first baby being born and get away with it and laugh and have fun and go home and, you know, have a parade. You know, six holidays per year, we have the cops parade for Veterans Day, Memorial Day, and Labor Day, and Halloween, and boy, we just love the cops. They're our heroes. We love them so much. No matter what they do, no matter how much we love their victims. Well, I'm sure that was just a one-off that time they murdered my friend. You know, remember Sally? Yeah, Sally's mom. Yeah, they cracked her skull open and she bled out right there on the jail cell floor, man. Oh, well, whatever. I mean, it was the cops that murdered her, right? So, hey, I still love them no matter what, because what might happen to me if it wasn't for them? Our fairy godmothers, the cops, who keep all the barbarians at bay. Just ask them. They'll tell you that their job is really important and necessary. Civilization would just render itself in pieces if it wasn't for our heroes in blue who can murder us with absolute impunity. All right. And by the way, here's a very important article, too, about how all this works. It's in New York Magazine. It's by Jesse Single, and it's called The Black, pardon me, The Black Activists Who Helped Launch the Drug War. And it's about how the heroin epidemic hit Harlem and how the good people of Harlem demanded that the police protect them from this epidemic of drugs. And they blamed the pushers, and they said they even called for federal troops to be brought in to create a police state, because this is what Americans believe. If there's a problem, you kill it with a police state. And if the NYPD isn't willing to do it, we want the U.S. Army to go into Harlem and find the junkies and round them up and put them in camps. No, these are real quotes from the do-gooder upper-middle-class blacks of Harlem in reaction to the heroin epidemic. And it's that kind of pressure from below that justified the Rockefeller drug laws. And the author here, I don't think this is that big of a point, but it's kind of a point, I guess. The author here points out that there's a common narrative now that the whites did this to the blacks of New York and the rest of America. Well, it's certainly true that the blacks weren't the ones with the power. But yes, absolutely, middle class and upper middle class blacks and religious leaders especially have pushed for drug wars. You know, neighborhood matriarchs and whatever. I remember back in the 1980s that, you know what? It's so racist the way that the LAPD will not come in here and end the drug problem in our community. They're subjecting us to it. Now, it was true that the supply was thanks to Ronald Reagan and the covert war in Nicaragua and El Salvador. That's absolutely a fact. But they were obviously barking up the wrong tree, making a huge mistake. But this is how it always works with the state. It's always, you know, the pincher strategy, pressure from above and below. And the politicians, and especially the police state, they rush to find any justification for any degree of brutality that they could dish out. And it's so easy to get people just stuck within this simple mode of thinking where anything that's bad must be banned. That is the way to deal with these problems. And I don't know if the attitudes are really changing, because honestly, I'm not black and I'm not Christian, so I don't go to black churches and talk with their ministers very often. I used to drive a cab around and meet lots of black people that way and talk with them about ministers, religious people, community pillars on the east side, that kind of thing, and talk with them about their opinions about stuff like this. And I know that back then the attitude was, listen, you can't legalize drugs. And I know you're right about economics and the whole thing, but if you legalize drugs, you're saying it's okay, because government is the great moral teacher. Nobody can find white Jesus anywhere, but the state says what is okay and what is not okay. And if you say that heroin and cocaine are legal, then you're saying it's okay for people to use them. And if you do that, then the drug problem will be so horrible that we'll all just have to lay down and die. And that's what people believe, and they're wrong. But you can see why they believe it. I mean, if somebody has a really bad cocaine or heroin problem, drugs like that, they can cause real severe problems for people. I don't think anybody deny that. People have a lot of fun. A lot of people are perfectly able to handle those kind of drugs. I'm not saying they're not. But there are a lot of problems that come from it. But it's this knee-jerk reaction that everything is a nail and the government is your hammer. And just look at the consequences. Look at what happens when you believe in government. What they do to you in response. Look what has happened to the black community. Damage far worse than heroin could have ever caused.